there is a wide range. Some candidates don't raise any money at all, but there are some districts where there's, for example, in District, I think it's District 7, there are 9 candidates. There, I think the candidates have a little harder time raising a lot of money as compared with some other districts because they're competing for those funds with 8 other candidates. In comparison, in District 6, both of those candidates have raised more money in District 6, each of those, than any of the candidates in District 9. So there's really some big differences based on some of those factors. And again, in District, most of the incumbents have done especially well. Some of those are, you know, talking about over $100,000, close to $200,000. The incumbents tend to have an easier job when it comes to raising money from interest groups and lobbyists and whatnot, and those tend to be the big political givers. And that was really what our analysis was about, was trying to figure out, Denver has some pretty relaxed contribution rules. Corporations are allowed to give, businesses of any kind are allowed to give, groups that usually have to spend money independently are allowed to give directly. There's a cap on the size of the donation, but there's a lot of ways around that. For example, one candidate received 2 contributions of $1,000 from nearly identically named LLCs, even though in a normal election for state legislature, those kinds of contributions are not allowed, but they are at the Denver level. So, again, incumbents are able to raise a lot of money from those kinds of sources, but in some of the competitive races, it's pretty close in terms of how much they're raising.
So the campaign finance rules for the municipal elections in Denver it sounds like completely different from the rules that are applicable to the state legislature.
They are. Denver, Colorado has some of the most, the lowest contribution limits in the country for state legislative races. But in Denver, the contribution limits are several times larger, and the types of groups that you can raise from are much broader. So in a state legislative race, you have basically four or five kinds of groups you can raise from. There's individuals, there's what are known as PACs or political committees. There's small donor committees, which are a form of PAC or political committee, but have different rules on how much they can give to candidates. And there's party committees, and then there's other political candidates committees. But for state legislature, for municipal races, you can take money from all of those groups, plus take money from corporations directly, plus take money from unions in any form, not just from their PAC, but in any way. You can also take it from, I think a neighborhood association or HOA, or an HOA had given to a candidate. So there's a lot of groups that are organizations that normally are banned from donating, but are allowed at the state legislative at the city council level.
Well, I know that Clean Slate Now has done an analysis on these groups and what's been given. Are you seeing any particular groups, organizations that are really standing out in terms of giving the most money to some of the municipal candidates?
One of the lessons that's very interesting is realtors are big givers in almost every level. They're especially important at the local level. There's a lot of realtor group donations here. You see that at the state legislative and federal levels as well, but I think it makes more sense to people at the local level because so much of the decisions being made by city government are relate to development, growth, housing sales, et cetera. Realtors are one of the biggest groups at the federal level, and I think to most voters that's just a little more confusing because it's less obvious to them what kind of influence is happening there. It makes sense, I think, at the local level that the realtors really want to see, a lot of pro-growth policies there.
I know that people are very much concerned about money in politics and how it influences policy making. Obviously, this election hasn't happened yet, but in looking at previous municipal elections, can you see the relationship between contributions that are given to candidates and how that might shape policy?
What you really see here is a lot of those, what I would call institutional or organizational donors or special interest groups. Special interest groups give a lot more to candidates who have already won, and the incumbents tend to get a lot more of that money. And you can see that in this election. The candidates who actually have raised the most money, kind of surprisingly, are the candidates who don't face any serious opposition. So you have a couple candidates for city council who either have no opposition, such as Chris Herndon, who's raised almost, as of the last report, raised almost $90,000, and Aldous Brooks, who is vastly outraising his opponents and is almost at $200,000. and they've raised more than a third of their money from organizations, from non-people. Whereas the candidates in the races where, you know, you're talking about nine candidates in the race or who are brand new candidates, they have a lot harder time winning over those special interest groups early, because the special interest groups know that they can just come in after the election and donate to whoever won, help them pay off their debt, and they don't have to worry about wasting money in candidates who don't win, and they still get to buy the same influence that they wanted to in the first place.
Well, you mentioned a couple of candidates there that are raising a lot of money from these non-people groups, from either PACs or organizations or corporations. Albus Brooks raising a lot of money. Where is that money coming from? Which organizations are donating to his campaign?
37% of his money has come from organizations. I will try to look up. I mean, I looked in the past, and a lot of it is groups that, you know, you would do business with the city. So I know Comcast has given to several members of the city council, and Albus Brooks has really taken it from a lot of different groups. And, you know, his opponents have combined raised less than $20,000 as of the last report. So it's really a stark difference in that race in terms of how much money they're getting and where it's mostly coming from. I'm opening up his top contributors right now to take a look. And he has a lot of maxed out donations. It's a lot of businesses around town, you know, whether it be restaurants or unions or developers. Developers have certainly been a strong area. And then there's lobbying firms as well. Both, one of the problems in Denver is lobbyists can both donate the maximum directly and through their company as well. So you tend to see a lot of what I call double-dipping donations by lobbyists and their corporations.
Which lobbyists for which corporations are donating to him?
The big ones are, you've got TRL Associates shows up on a lot of incumbent reports. And I know they've got a strong relationship with city council, and they get a lot of business around town. There's some others. That's the main one that I see very frequently. You see some developers as well. I see East West Partners on his list. Bell's Associates, I'm not sure who that firm is, but he has a lot of maxed out contributions from groups. There's a couple development companies. One of the funny things in the local election is you don't really know who some of these groups are, because they come up with almost any name for their LLC. Some of them are literally an address. 3330 Brighton Boulevard LLC has donated to several candidates. And you really have to, you know, look up who that is to get any sense of what that group is. Or there's another one, MDC Holdings. The name in the LLC, or the name, doesn't really tell you anything about who's giving, but they're still required to give, so that you can then do even more research to figure out who owns those companies. And sometimes you find that the companies are owned by the same people.
Well, given the current climate with the campaign finance rules in Denver, pretty much allowing any organization, corporation, group to give, and the fact that incumbents are far outpacing the challengers for raising money, what does this mean about just the average Denver resident getting involved in city council and maybe deciding to run for office?
It means it's going to be really hard to get regular people who represent their neighborhoods to run. I think what you tend to find is the people who run have a little bit more money. There's several candidates who are at least partially self-financing their races. The people who don't run are the ones who have, you know, regular jobs, hourly jobs, and who are probably the closest to, you know, feeling the pain that regular neighbors are feeling these days when it comes to the affordability of housing and other issues. Unfortunately, that means that it's going to be a little bit harder for the voters to connect with their politicians, because they're just not coming from the same kind of background. And then the money does buy access. There's a lot of studies out there that shows donating to candidates buys access. And it, in effect, because you only have so many hours in the day, you're essentially shutting out constituents to some degree in that regard as well. You know, there's some studies that I've seen that show that political givers are more likely to be able to get a meeting, for example, with their member of Congress or their elected officials than a citizen who just who's representing a group and doesn't have a donation, you know, on the books already. And there's a lot of ways like that where it's a lot harder. Now, that's not to say that all candidates are like that. Some candidates get very, very low percentage of their money from organizations or lobbyists in general. There's a couple candidates who are actually running and swearing off special interest political action committee candidate money, and they are still able to raise money. they just are able to rely more on individuals for that money. So you also then, I think, kind of lose one of the incentives for voting is you feel like it matters, and you feel like your vote's going to make a difference and it's your voice. But when your vote is competing with somebody else's $1,000 check, it's really hard to see how your vote's going to win out in that battle.